Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
This podcast is brought to you by Native Grape Odyssey. Native Grape Odyssey is an educational project financed by the European Union to promote European wine in Canada, Japan, and Russia. Enjoy. It's from Europe.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Wald, and my guest today is Serena Imazio.
Yes,
Serena is
right.
You're Italian.
Yes.
You speak perfect English, and you've worked with Professor Attilio Scienza. With this book in front of me, La Stirpe del Vino, what does that mean?
La Stirpe del Vino means the families of wine. So we are trying to describe which is the history behind the great families, the Pinot family, the Chardonnay, and who are the ancestors, who are the brothers, the sisters, mothers and fathers, trying to understand how these grapevines went through in the European contest.
Okay, so in terms, and what were the sort of key points in terms of, say, if we go back to the Middle Ages and cold weather?
Yes.
What happened then? Why was that important? There was a cold period, wasn't there? What happened?
Yes,
then?
We had at the beginning of the Middle Age, we had a hot period, and that was a sort of optimum for vine growing and, of course, for wine production. After that, we had a cold period, which we call the little glaciation, the
little
piccola glaciazione. What happened? It happened that the wine was not abandoned. The wine production was still one of the main interests of human beings. And the thing that changed were the varieties. And we had the first selection of which varieties were the best and the mostly adapted to that weather. So this was the period where Chardonnay had his opportunity to come out as a great vine and wine variety, because Chardonnay is an early variety. So we have it at maturation. The berries are mature in a very early period and not at the beginning of autumn. So you can understand that in a period where you have cold weather, autumn is a risky moment for plant maturation and for fruit maturation. So this was the first step of selection of these varieties, but we can talk about lots of other situation and cases.
What about a period when, say, the weather was a little bit warmer, or trends maybe with the sweeter wines in the Mediterranean, the Malvasias, why did they suddenly become famous or popular?
They become famous or popular because they had to have Malvasia become famous during the Venetian period, because we call them in Italy, we call them the vini navigati. That means that were wines that were bought and made in the Mediterranean islands and then spread to all the Mediterranean by the Venetian Republic.
And by boat, yeah.
By boat, yes, of course, by boat. And this is why we call them the sailed wines. And so sweet, because they had to go through a long period in boats. So they needed to be conserved and to arrive at destination still as a good product for the consumers. And this is the reason why they were so sweet. And these wines started to educate the taste of the most important people in all the
noble families.
The noble families.
Because they were quite expensive, weren't they, some of
yes,
these wines?
Yes, of course they were expensive, and these made them particularly for a very high level of people, the richest people. But in those periods, we still have in Europe, especially in the most important towns in Italy, as Milano, we still have vines that are cultivated and wines that are produced for common people, for the poorest part of the society. And especially in Milano, we know that there were lots and lots of vineyards
in Milan.
In Milano,
really?
Yes. And we also have a very important vineyard, which was cultivated from Leonardo da Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci was one of the owner of the most important vineyards in Milano, and he talks about that vineyard, and it was a Malvasia vineyard. We know now that it was a Malvasia vineyard, and we did this work with Attilio Scienza, analyzing DNA of some little pieces found in this beautiful garden a few years ago, and we were able to understand which was the exact variety cultivated by Leonardo da Vinci.
Because he had his own farm in near Florence, well, in Tuscany, didn't he?
He was in Tuscan, and he has, of course, Tuscan origins. The only vineyard he talks about is the one in Milano.
Oh, okay.
And he leaves it also as a part of his inheritance to his to a friend. So this is one of the history that we talk about in the books.
Tell me about the vine story of Sangiovese and then the Lambrusco. The Lambrusco is a family of vines, isn't it?
Lambrusco is a family of vines. Not all the Lambrusco vines are genetically linked one to the other, but Lambrusco is a word used by the Romans to identify vines that came from the bush. So they are wild varieties, the ancestors of the cultivated varieties we have. Lambrusco, so we always thought that Lambrusco varieties were a sort of link from cultivated to wild grapevines. But we didn't have a real demonstration about this. And we had it when analyzing the DNA of some Lambrusco varieties, we found that these varieties are mostly linked and close to the wild compartment of grapevines than to the cultivated compartment. So they are in the facts, they are cultivated. They are cultivated varieties. Lambrusco di Sorbara, which is one of the most important varieties cultivated in Emilia-Romagna, is, of course, a cultivated variety. We have lots of bottles made by Lambrusco di Sorbara, but it's one of the Lambrusco varieties that we found are closer to the wild compartment. So it's a sort of match linking the two great compartments. And since we had this demonstration with didn't have the proof that wild vines and cultivated vines were linked together. That gave us this opportunity to understand that we had this kind of connection between the two compartments.
I mean, it's interesting that Lambrusco often is I'm not sure in every market, but certainly in the UK market, it's been damned as a terrible wine.
Yes, but it's not
cheap,
true.
Cheerful, and it is kind of, as we've just been hearing, it's the family of the Lambrusco vines, or at least Sorbara, at least, is a key sort of link, it seems, between, as we're hearing, from the wild vines that generally make wine that we don't find palatable with the vinifera vines, whose wines we do find palatable. So it's a great thumbs up, I think, for poor old Lambrusco. People are my, I did a podcast recently, my son interviewed me. How was he? No, he's 11 at the time.
Uh-huh.
And he asked, Dad, what's your favourite wine? Italian wine. I said, Lambrusco is one of my favourite Italian wines. And, you know, he doesn't know what Lambrusco is. He was like, okay. And he asked me the next question. But my friends, Monty, are you serious? Or why didn't you say things like Chateau Lafite or whatever? And I love it because it's a wine that you can drink every day. It's joyful.
Yes.
You don't have to think too much about it. You can relax. It's versatile with food, etc. It's not too fizzy. And
I think that you also have to consider that the wine types evolve with the cook,
with the food
of the country, of the region. And if you taste Lambrusco with gnocco fritto and with all the sausages that Emilia-Romagna
it's
produces,
a rich cuisine,
and with prosciutto, Lambrusco is, you need to drink Lambrusco to have your mouth in a proper set
So for this book, the Sangiovese Lambrusco, what do we learn about Sangiovese? In the book?
Sangiovese, we know almost everything about Sangiovese. Sangiovese is a great variety, the basis of the most important Italian wines. And what we learned analyzing Sangiovese DNA is that the question was, is Sangiovese born in Tuscany or in Emilia-Romagna? Because both the region have lots of Sangiovese. And what we learned from DNA is that Sangiovese is not born in Tuscany and Sangiovese is not born in Emilia-Romagna. Sangiovese comes from the south of Italy. And
from whereabouts exactly?
We think that he has ancestors from Calabria or Sicily. So it's completely out of the idea that we have about this great grapevine. So another thing we learned about Sangiovese is that Sangiovese has Garganega. Garganega for the white wines and Sangiovese from the black wines are two key varieties in the Italian germplasm platform because they are ancestors in different ways of lots of Italian varieties.
So in Garganega's case, what is Garganega linked to?
Garganega is linked to lots of to Grecanico, as an example, and to other white varieties that we cultivated in the south of Italy. And it's difficult to say because we have new findings every year about
really
yes.
So it's ongoing. It's not like we know all the answers yet.
No, we don't know all the answers. We can't know all the answers, and we just need to analyze lots and lots of genetic traits to understand if the link is really correct or not. And
so when these analyses are taking place, I mean, how long does it take? If I come up to your office with a grapevine cutting and
nowadays it's quite easy because you have to analyze at least 50 different loci in the DNA,
spots of
the DNA, and compare them to, I guess, if you don't have no idea about the wood you have in your hands, all the varieties that you know and that you have. It was very difficult 10, 20 years ago. Now is easier because we have lots of database. All the data that we collect around the world in all the labs working on grapevine genetics are stored in databases, and the access to these databases is public, so you can have these informations and you can compare your profile, your DNA profile, with all the ones that are worldwide collected and stored in the databases. And this made the work very, very easy. But you don't know. I mean, if the variety has ancestors that are extinct, and, you know, in Europe, Phylloxera erased lots of the genetic platform that we cultivated, you are not able to find parents or ancestors. And this is makes the work very difficult because you may not find absolutely.
You may never find out.
Of course.
Okay. I just wanted to say thanks to my guest today, Serena Imazio.
Thank you.
Okay?
Yes, it's okay.
For enlightening us a little bit about vine genetics. Yeah. It's not often we broach that subject on the Italian Wine Podcast, but it's very important, especially as regards Italian wine, as we don't have all the answers, but we're gradually, it seems, getting some of the answers to those genetic questions and origins of those great varieties whose origins are unclear. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, thanks for tuning into the Italian Wine Podcast. Our channels are SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, and Himalaya FM. We're also widely available on other podcast apps. Our official website is italianwinepodcast.com, and that's all one word. If you're using iTunes, feel free to rate the podcast or write a review. Thanks.
This podcast has been brought to you by Native Grape Odyssey, discovering the true essence of high-quality wine from Europe. Find out more on nativegrapeodyssey.eu. Enjoy. It's from Europe.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.